They say love is blind, but sometimes it's also quiet. It doesn't always leave with screaming matches or slammed doors. Sometimes it disappears slowly, through gaslighting, silent treatments, emotional withdrawal disguised as protection, and by the time you realize what's happening, you're already lost, trapped in a version of love that feels more like punishment than partnership. Heartbreak and manipulation. Psychological Lessons in Letting Go is not just a story of a breakup. It's a deep cinematic journey through the emotional wreckage left behind when love becomes control. Through 10 gripping chapters, this immersive audiobook explores the quiet tactics manipulators use to keep you hooked, the painful unraveling of identity, and the powerful process of reclaiming your voice. Because sometimes, walking away isn't just survival, it's transformation. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1, The Silent Ending. She didn't scream. She didn't beg. She just stood there, phone in hand, reading the final message he sent. I need space. Don't text me anymore. After years of shared memories, whispered promises, and plans scribbled on napkins for a future that would never come, this was the full stop. No explanation, no warning, just space. At first, Jasmine thought it was a joke, the kind he always played when he wanted attention. But as hours turned into days, and the phone remained silent, reality tightened around her chest like a slow coil. The manipulation had always been subtle. A word withheld here, a guilt trip there. A well-timed cold shoulder followed by affection that felt like a reward. For a long time, Jasmine called it passion. Later, she would learn the word for it was control. She replayed everything. The slow shift from sweet gestures to strategic silence, from shared dinners to emotional withdrawal. He didn't hit. He didn't yell. He simply disappeared piece by piece until she was loving a ghost. By the time he sent that final message, the version of herself that once knew joy, spontaneity, and peace had already withered into someone she barely recognized. It started innocently, a joke about her friends, a comment about her outfit, a rule about when to post pictures. Babe, I'm just trying to protect you, he would say, and she believed him. But control dressed in concern is still control. And love without freedom is not love at all. Now, the silence wasn't just his. It echoed inside her. She sat on the edge of the bed, staring at the floor, wondering how someone could make you feel invisible and indispensable at the same time. Outside, the city pulsed forward without her. Cars moved, shops opened, life went on. Inside, her world was frozen, like the moment before a scream that never quite makes it out. She didn't cry, yet. Not because she didn't want to, but because the manipulation had trained her to suppress even that. You're too emotional. You're overreacting. You always make things worse. So instead, she stared at the phone, waiting, hoping, dreading. Hours passed. She walked to the kitchen and stood still. She hadn't eaten since the night before, but hunger was too quiet to fight. What screamed louder was shame, not because he left, but because she stayed so long. In that quiet moment, something flickered in her chest. A truth. A seed. She whispered it aloud, just once. He didn't love me. He needed to control me. It was the first honest thing she had said in weeks. It didn't make her feel better. It made her feel awake. That awakening wasn't loud. It was soft. Like breath returning to lungs after you've been underwater too long. Later that evening, she opened her notes app and typed the words, "Letting go is not weakness. It is the beginning of strength." Then, slowly, she began to list the things she had lost. Her laughter, her independence, her opinions, her friends, her voice. And then, Beneath it, she made another list. The things she would reclaim. She didn't know how yet. She didn't have a plan. But she had begun, and that was enough for tonight. Chapter 2. Rewriting the story. Jasmine didn't sleep that night. Her body begged for rest, but her mind kept turning pages from a book she never wanted to read again. Each memory was a paragraph. Each mistake, a footnote she couldn't skip. By morning, sunlight spilled across the hardwood floor like a quiet invitation to begin again. But Jasmine didn't feel renewed. She felt raw, like someone had peeled back her skin and exposed every nerve ending. She walked past the mirror in the hallway, then stopped. It was the first time she looked at herself, really looked, in months. Her eyes were swollen, not from tears, but from exhaustion. Her once bright energy had dulled into a quiet vacancy. Her reflection whispered, a question she couldn't avoid anymore. Who did you become for him, and worse, why? Jasmine reached for her journal, not the fake one she kept on the coffee table with meat quotes and curated affirmations, but the real one, the one she hadn't touched since he told her journaling was a waste of time. The first page was blank, just like she felt. But then the pen moved, not with poetry, with truth. He didn't like when I talked about my goals. He rolled his eyes when I said I wanted to move abroad. He changed the subject every time I talked about my art. He told me I was dramatic when I cried. He said I was needy when I asked for affection. Line by line, she mapped out the architecture of manipulation. Not physical chains, but psychological ones. He didn't isolate her from her friends. He made her feel guilty for needing them. He didn't forbid her dreams. He made her feel selfish for chasing them. Control, dressed in politeness. Gaslighting, draped in jokes. She had told herself it was just his way, that relationships required compromise. But what she called compromise was really disappearance, a slow erosion of self. She put the pen down. Her hands trembled, not from fear, but from clarity. Somewhere in that silence, her phone buzzed. Not him. Her mother. Just three words. Are you okay? Jasmine stared at it for a long time. The last time they spoke, her mother had asked, gently, if she was happy. Jasmine had snapped, called her judgmental, defensive. You don't understand him, she had said. But maybe her mother had understood too well. She typed back, I don't know. It was the most honest answer she could give. She didn't know who she was without him, but she was starting to learn who she wasn't. That afternoon, Jasmine opened a private browser and searched. Sign of emotional manipulation in relationships. Each bullet point hit like thunder. You question your memory or perception. You feel guilty for expressing needs. You often apologize without knowing why. You feel drained after every interaction. You fear their silence more than their words. Jasmine didn't just relate, she recognized it. It was her life. She felt the urge to call him, just to ask why, to get closure. But closure from a manipulator is another manipulation. They don't give answers, they give new confusion. So instead, she made tea. It was a small thing, but in that moment, it was defiance. He hated when she drank herbal tea. Said it made the house smell like hippie stuff, but it was her favourite. Chamomile, warm, gentle, safe. She curled up on the couch, wrapped in a blanket he used to muck. And she sipped. It was the first act of reclaiming. By evening, Jasmine opened a new document on her laptop, titled, The Truth I Denied. She wrote, He never said I couldn't be myself. He just punished me when I was. That sentence sat heavy, but it was the beginning of a new story. Not about him, about her. Healing wouldn't be poetic. It wouldn't be a montage of yoga, wine nights, and inspirational quotes. It would be slow, messy, quiet, but it would be real. And this time, the narrative was hers to write. Chapter 3. The withdrawal phase. The days after Jasmine ended contact with him felt eerily similar to detox. Not a detox from alcohol, not drugs, but something just as addictive. Emotional dependency. A kind of craving not for the person, but for the rhythm of dysfunction they created. She didn't miss him. She missed the cycle. The tension. The release. The distance. The sudden affection. The calm before the cold shoulder. The long silences broken by one breadcrumb of kindness that felt like a feast. This was the pattern she had come to expect. And like any addiction, even after breaking it, the mind aches for the ritual. At 2 a.m., Jasmine found herself scrolling back through old texts. Not the hurtful ones, the sweet ones. The ones where he said she was his everything. The ones he sent after every fight, calling her his soulmate, promising to change. Back then, those messages had felt like apologies. Now, she realized, they were reinforcements. He was never sorry for what he did. He was sorry, she noticed. She deleted the entire thread, then emptied the recently deleted folder. It felt like slamming a door in a house she no longer wanted to live in. But slamming the door doesn't mean you're not still standing behind it. Listening. The next morning, she woke with a familiar tightness in her chest. That kind of ache that lives somewhere between grief and self-doubt. It whispered. What if you were wrong? What if you overreacted? What if you really did love you? It was the voice he'd trained into her. Gaslighting doesn't end when they leave. It echoes long after, like a song stuck in your head that you didn't choose. She sat on the balcony with a cup of black coffee, no sugar, just how she liked it, before she stopped liking things for herself. Below, the city murmured its usual sounds. Cars, birds, life. In her notebook, she wrote down a sentence from something she had read the night before. Manipulators don't fear losing you. They fear losing control over you. It hit her like a confession. Not his, but hers. Later that day, Jasmine went to a support group. She didn't speak, just listened. A woman with a gentle voice talked about how her ex used to tell her she was lucky anyone tolerated her. Another shared how she stopped wearing bright colours because he said she looked desperate. The stories weren't identical, but the patterns were. And for the first time, Jasmine didn't feel crazy. She felt seen. The moderator said something that Jasmine would carry for weeks. It's not love if you have to abandon yourself to keep it. That night, she cried. Not a quiet tear down the cheek. Not a poetic, soft sob. A full body, shaking, hiccuping cry that left her gasping. It was grief, yes, but not just for him. She was mourning herself. The version of her that silenced her opinions to keep peace, that dressed down so he wouldn't accuse her of seeking attention, that laughed less so he wouldn't say she was annoying. She grieved the small violences she allowed for the sake of feeling loved. Then came the question she couldn't escape. Did he ever really love me? The answer didn't come in a lightning bolt. It came in fragments. If he had, he wouldn't have confused dominance with devotion. If he had, he wouldn't have made her prove her worth while offering none of his own. If he had, he wouldn't have made her feel crazy for needing basic respect. Love is not supposed to make you feel invisible, or disposable, or paranoid. Love does not hide behind silence and punish you for asking questions. By the end of the night, Jasmine had her answer. No, he didn't love her. But more importantly, she hadn't loved herself enough to walk away sooner. But she was now. And that was a start. Chapter 4. The Lie of Closure. Closure. The word echoed like an empty hallway. Everyone told her she needed it. Her friends, her therapist, even the articles she stayed up late reading. Get closure and move on, they said, like it was something you could order off a menu. But closure, Jasmine had come to realize, was just another form of chasing him. She had drafted the message 100 times. I just need to understand why. Was it ever real? What did I do wrong? Each time, she deleted it. Because what she really wanted wasn't answers. It was permission. Permission to hurt. Permission to be angry. Permission to believe that her pain meant something. That it wasn't all for nothing. But manipulators don't give closure. They give confusion. Because confusion keeps you reaching. Closure ends the game. And they never want the game to end. Unless they're the ones walking away. So she didn't send the message. Instead, she wrote a different one. To herself. He does not hold the answers. He is the question I no longer need to ask. That afternoon, she ran into someone they used to know. A mutual friend. Casual, kind. The conversation was short, but familiar. You know, he really misses you, they said. Jasmine froze. That one sentence was a match dropped in a room soaked in doubt. She smiled politely and changed the subject. But the word stuck. Did he miss her? Of course he did. He missed the comfort, the attention, the power. Not her. He missed the version of her who walked on eggshells, the one who asked permission to feel, the one who bent herself into shapes to avoid setting him off. He missed the mirror she held up to make him feel big. He didn't miss her freedom, or her fire, or her clarity. Later that night, Jasmine sat down with an exercise her therapist had given her. Write a letter you'll never send. She hesitated at first, but then the pen began to move. Dear you didn't destroy me. You just revealed the parts of me I hadn't protected. I gave you access to my mind, my heart, my time, and you repaid it with silence and shame. I begged for scraps of affection when I should have demanded respect. I twisted myself to fit inside your world and called it love. But that wasn't love. That was survival. And I'm done surviving. You don't get to define my story. You're just a chapter I've finally closed. I won't hate you. That would keep me bound to you. I forgive you. Not for your sake, but for mine. Goodbye. Me. She folded the letter, placed it in a small box, and put it on a high shelf in her closet. Not to hide it, but to honour it. She didn't need to send it to be heard. Writing it was enough. And for the first time in weeks, she felt a lightness in her chest, where the ache used to live. In the morning, she did something bold. She opened a blank calendar and titled it Reclamation. Every day, she would do one thing to reclaim her identity. Day one, wore her bold red lipstick. He hated it. Day two, played her favourite music. He called it noise. Day three, booked a weekend trip. He said she couldn't handle travelling alone. Each small act was a statement. I am not yours anymore. Closure wasn't a conversation. It wasn't a text. It wasn't a final meeting in a cafe under the guise of just talking. Closure was self-return. Reclamation. The slow, daily process of choosing yourself even when it hurts. Because healing doesn't wait for permission. It begins the moment you stop asking questions that only lead you back to pain. Chapter 5. Triggers and Ghosts. Healing, Jasmine learned, doesn't move in a straight line. Some mornings, she felt powerful. She drank her coffee on the balcony, hair undone, sun on her face, and thought, I survived him. Other mornings, she crumbled in the shower, shaking under hot water that couldn't wash away memory. The hardest part wasn't the silence. It was the ghosts. Not literal ones, but emotional echoes. She'd walk past a restaurant and remember the way he used to hold her hand under the table, before letting go mid-sentence, like even her touch bored him. She'd hear a song they danced to once, and the lyrics felt like betrayal. Sometimes, her body remembered before her mind did. A certain cologne in a grocery store. The vibration of her phone at 3 a.m. A phrase someone said in passing. And just like that, the old panic returned. Heart racing. Breath shallow. Vision blurry. It was a trauma response, not longing. But in the moment, it was hard to tell the difference. One evening, while clearing out her closet, Jasmine found the jacket he left behind. A black hoodie, worn out, still smelling faintly of his cologne and cigarette smoke. She sat on the floor, holding it in her lap, like a wound. She thought about keeping it, not because she missed him, but because she hadn't let go of the fantasy, the version of him that existed only in the good moments, the one who made her feel chosen, who whispered promises into her hair, who cried when she almost left once and said he couldn't live without her. But that version of him was a mask, a performance, a manipulation. And clinging to that illusion meant she was still, in some way, asking for validation from someone who'd already proven he couldn't offer it. So she stood up, walked to the trash chute, and dropped the hoodie inside. It didn't feel victorious. It felt necessary. Later that week, Jasmine went to a bookstore. It had become her sanctuary. Aisles of quiet stories, untouched by memory. She wandered to the psychology section and pulled out a slim book on emotional abuse. The cover was simple, the words inside devastating. She read about love bombing, intermittent reinforcement, and the trauma bond. How cycles of reward and punishment create dependence. It wasn't new information, but this time it hit differently. She finally had a name for what she endured. And when you can name something, you can confront it. You can stop blaming yourself for not escaping what you couldn't yet see. That night, she wrote again. This time, not to him. To the version of herself that stayed. Dear me, I know why you stayed. You didn't want to be wrong. You didn't want to start over. You wanted to believe people could change. You were afraid of being alone. You thought love meant sacrifice, that your worth was tied to how much pain you could endure without breaking. But you know now, love doesn't demand silence, or self-erasure, or suffering. I'm not mad at you. You were doing your best with what you knew. But now, we know better. And I won't abandon you again. We're coming home to ourselves. The next morning, Jasmine walked past a couple arguing on the sidewalk. She slowed, instinctively listening. The man's voice was low, cold. The woman, deflated. Apologizing for something she probably didn't do, Jasmine didn't intervene. But her heart clenched, because she remembered what it was like to apologize, just to stop the room from turning colder. She kept walking. But in her mind, she whispered to the woman, "You're not crazy. You're just conditioned to call control love." Triggers didn't mean she was failing. They meant she was still healing. And ghosts don't haunt forever. Eventually, they fade, especially when you stop feeding them. Chapter 6. Reclaiming the Body. Jasmine stood in front of her bedroom mirror, wearing a sundress she hadn't touched in over a year. The fabric clung gently to her hips, the pattern loud and unapologetic. She used to love this dress, but he once told her it was too much, too bright, too tight, too noticeable. So she folded it away and wore muted tones, earth colours, soft silhouettes, invisible shades. He never said, "Don't wear that." He just looked her up and down with a smirk and said, "Trying a little hard, don't you think?" That was all it took. Shame did the rest. Now, months later, the dress still fit, but she didn't feel like the same person wearing it. She felt like someone waking up in their own skin again. When we talk about manipulation, we rarely talk about the body. But that's where it lingers. In the way Jasmine hunched her shoulders without realizing, the way she crossed her arms at every compliment, the way she instinctively looked down when someone raised their voice. The body remembers the subtle punishments, the flinches that never became bruises, the space she learned to shrink inside of.
So she started small.
Yoga at home. Not for flexibility, not for fitness, but to inhabit her own breath again. Each pose felt like an apology to herself, for the years she spent contorting to please someone else. She lit incense, played music, danced. Not gracefully, not perfectly, just freely. Some days, she moved slowly, carefully. Other days, she danced until sweat ran down her back and she collapsed on the floor in tears. It wasn't always joy. Sometimes, it was rage. But it was hers. Later, she remembered how he used to touch her. Not violently, but carelessly. Like her body was something to use, not to cherish. As if consent were assumed, not earned. He'd roll over afterward and say things like, "You should feel lucky I'm attracted to you," and she'd smile, because arguing meant cold silence for days. She hadn't realized how deeply that shaped her, how often she confused attention with affection, how often she said yes when her body whispered no. So now, she was learning to ask herself what she wanted, not just what she would allow. She practiced saying no in the mirror. "No. No, thank you. That doesn't feel good. I don't owe you anything. I am not responsible for your emotions." She didn't realize how hard it was to say no until she heard her own voice shake. But voice, like muscle, strengthens with use. One morning, Jasmine signed up for a self-defense class. It wasn't about fighting, it was about claiming space. She stood taller after just one session, not because she learned to strike, but because she gave herself permission to be visible. She was no longer shrinking to be palatable. By the end of the week, Jasmine took herself on a date, a real one, dressed up, booked the table for one, ordered her favorite dessert first. No distractions, no pretending to be busy, just her, a glass of wine, and the quiet knowledge that she deserved to enjoy her own company. She didn't look around the restaurant nervously. She didn't wait for validation. She didn't scroll for escape. She smiled, a full smile, one she didn't have to earn. And in that moment, she didn't feel broken. She felt whole. Healing wasn't just a mental journey. It was physical, embodied, slow. And for Jasmine, reclaiming her body was an act of resistance. A way of saying, "You don't get to live here anymore. I do." Chapter 7. When Forgiveness Feels Impossible. Jasmine had always misunderstood forgiveness. To her, it once meant excusing what happened, letting someone off the hook, pretending it didn't hurt, moving on without accountability. Forgiveness, she thought, was for the other person. But now, sitting in her living room with a journal on her lap and a knot in her chest, she realized something quietly devastating. She wasn't angry at him anymore. She was angry at herself. For not leaving sooner. For believing him. For bending until she broke. For handing over her voice, her boundaries, her worth, just to keep the peace. It wasn't justice she craved. It was permission to feel everything she buried, to survive. She flipped through her old journals, reading entries written in a voice she barely recognized. There were pages where she defended him, where she blamed herself, where she justified the cold silences, the sarcasm, the way he turned every argument into a lecture on how she was too sensitive. And then, buried between those pages, she found one sentence. "Maybe if I can just be better, he'll come back." She stared at the words like a crime scene, because that was the root of it. She had internalized the idea that his love, or lack of it, was a reflection of her worth, that if she could just be less emotional, less opinionated, less needy, she'd be worthy of staying. And so, forgiveness couldn't begin with him. It had to begin with her. Jasmine took a long walk that day, past their old coffee shop, past the park bench where they once talked about the future, past the street where they argued in the rain and he called her dramatic for crying. The memories didn't sting as much now. They just existed, like old photographs, evidence of a life she no longer lived. She sat beneath a tree and whispered a sentence into the wind. Not for him, not for anyone else to hear, but for herself.
I forgive you for not knowing better.
It wasn't an exoneration. It wasn't an invitation to return. It was an exhale, a letting go. She didn't forgive because he deserved it. She forgave because she did. In therapy the next day, she said it aloud. I think I'm done being angry. Her therapist nodded slowly. That doesn't mean what happened is okay, she said. It just means you've stopped carrying the poison. Jasmine smiled. Not because she felt triumphant, but because something in her had softened. Forgiveness wasn't a moment. It was a series of choices. To stop rereading the messages. To stop checking his social media. To stop rehearsing the things she wished she'd said. To stop using pain as proof of love. And more importantly, to stop punishing herself for not escaping sooner. She had loved with her whole heart. That was never the problem. The problem was thinking that love required self-destruction. That night, Jasmine did something she never thought she could do. She went into her email account, searched his name, and hit delete all. Years of conversations, apologies, manipulations, promises, explanations.
Gone.
It wasn't an act of rage. It was an act of mercy. For herself. Then she whispered a quiet prayer. Not for him, but for the girl she used to be. May you never again confuse suffering with loyalty. May you never again stay where you are, only seen in pieces. May you love yourself with the kind of grace no one ever taught you. She didn't need a grand gesture, or closure, or revenge. She just needed peace. And for the first time in a long time, she felt it beginning. Chapter 8. Learning to love without fear. The first time Jasmine felt something for someone new, it caught her off guard. It wasn't dramatic. It wasn't intense. It didn't rush in like a flood or burn like a fire. It was a quiet ease. A softness in conversation, a sense of being seen. They met at a book launch. He complimented her insight, not her appearance. When she spoke, he listened. Without interrupting, without correcting, without shifting the spotlight to himself. Still, Jasmine flinched when he reached for her hand. Not because he did anything wrong, but because the last time she trusted someone, her boundaries were slowly eroded beneath the weight of love. She pulled back, gently. I move slow now, she said. He nodded. No guilt trip, no pressure, just understanding. It was unfamiliar territory. Back home, Jasmine sat with that moment. She asked herself a question she never thought to ask before. What does safe love feel like? The answer wasn't passion. It was peace. Not adrenaline, but steadiness. Not manipulation, but mutual respect. But even peace felt foreign at first. Like her nervous system didn't know what to do with kindness that didn't ask for anything in return. Because when you've been trained to earn affection, unconditional presence can feel suspicious. So she reminded herself, this wasn't him. This was now. She made a list of new boundaries. Not walls, but gates. I will not apologize for having needs. I will not shrink to avoid conflict. I will not confuse emotional unavailability with mystery. I will not perform stability to make others comfortable. I will not call red flags misunderstandings. Each line was a promise. To herself, not anyone else. Still, the fears lingered. What if she let her guard down again? What if kindness was just a prelude to control? What if vulnerability made her foolish? Healing, she realized, didn't mean never fearing again. It meant choosing to trust herself more than the fear. She started having honest conversations with the new man in her life. Not trauma dumps, just truth. I've been through something, she told him. It rewired how I trust. I need transparency. I need slowness. I need space to breathe. He nodded. You deserve that, he said. And I'm not in a hurry. For the first time, she felt love that didn't chase, didn't cling, didn't demand.
Just showed up.
One afternoon, they walked through a local art gallery. A painting caught her eye, an abstract portrait of a woman with her heart in her hands, but her feet planted firmly on the ground. She stood in front of it for a long time. That's how I feel, she said, like I'm finally learning to offer love without giving myself away. He didn't say anything. He just looked at her the way she had once dreamed of being looked at, like she was whole. Later that night, Jasmine journaled again. Real love doesn't ask me to sacrifice my voice. It encourages me to use it. Real love doesn't feel like chasing. It feels like being met. Real love doesn't trigger my survival mode. It lets me rest. Letting someone new in wasn't the finish line. It wasn't proof she'd healed. It was a mirror. One that reflected how far she'd come. And how deeply she now knew the difference between love that lifts you and love that depletes you. Jasmine wasn't trying to forget the past anymore. She was learning to carry it differently, without letting it weigh down the present. Because love, when it's real, doesn't demand your disappearance. It welcomes your fullness. Chapter 9, The Full Return. Jasmine stood in front of the same mirror where, months ago, she barely recognized herself. Back then, her reflection looked hollow, eyes dim, shoulders hunched, breath shallow from walking on emotional eggshells for too long. But now, something was different. She was different. Her eyes were sharper, her spine straighter, her energy grounded, not in performance or perfection, but in presence. She wasn't healed in the polished, Instagrammable sense. She still had triggers, still had doubts, still had moments where a scent, a song, or a stray comment could drop her heart into her stomach. But she trusted herself now. She didn't silence her needs. She didn't apologize for setting boundaries. She no longer mistook discomfort for love or confusion for chemistry. She had returned to herself. That week, Jasmine got a text. From him. The name lit up her phone like an old alarm. Just wanted to see how you're doing. No apology, no accountability, just that open-ended hook manipulators always leave behind, fishing to see if the line still works. She didn't respond. Not out of spite, but because she didn't need to. Silence was her new language. A boundary. A closing door with no explanation required. She smiled, deleted the message, and blocked the number. For good this time. The next morning, she spoke at a local women's centre. It was a small event, mostly strangers, but she stood in front of them and told her story. Not perfectly, not polished, but honestly. She talked about how manipulation isn't always loud. Sometimes, it comes dressed as love. Sometimes, it feels like responsibility, like loyalty, like guilt. And that's why it's so hard to leave. Heads nodded. Eyes welled. One woman reached for her hand afterward and whispered, "You've said everything I couldn't say out loud." That was the moment Jasmine realized. Her pain had found purpose, not just in her survival, but in her voice. Later, she visited her favorite beach. Alone. No distractions. No need to document it. No one to impress. Just her, the ocean, and the rhythm of her own breath. She walked barefoot along the shore, letting the water soak the hem of her dress. She whispered one final goodbye, not to him, but to the version of herself that once begged to be chosen by someone who never deserved her. Then she looked up at the sky and said, "Thank you for breaking me. You revealed what was unbreakable." That night, she wrote the last line in her journal. I thought heartbreak was the end of my story.
but it was the beginning of my becoming.
Healing didn't mean she was untouched. It meant she was no longer owned by the pain.
She loved again, slowly, intentionally. But more importantly, she believed again. In herself, in her worth, in love that doesn't ask for sacrifice, only presence. And in that belief, she found everything she thought she had lost. Chapter 10. Becoming the Author. It had been 1 year since the day Jasmine received that final message. 12 months since the silence, since the unravelling, since the slow awakening from a relationship that left her starved of truth, yet full of excuses. Now, she sat across from herself, not the fractured version, not the one who begged, who dimmed, who disappeared, but the version she rebuilt from the ground up. No longer the girl who asked, "Why didn't he love me?" Now the woman who asked, "Why did I ever think that was love?" Today was the launch of her book. She never meant to write one. But page by page, her private journal had evolved into something larger. Not a tell-all. Not revenge. Not a story about him. A story about her. About survival. Recovery. Return. The event was held in a modest community bookstore. Soft lights, scattered chairs, the scent of fresh pages and brewed coffee in the air. The room was full, not of followers, but of believers. Women, men, young people, survivors, listeners. And Jasmine, standing at the front, wearing that bold red dress, the one he told her was too much, smiled without shrinking. She opened the reading with the first paragraph from her book. "This is not a love story. This is a story about forgetting how to love yourself and then remembering. About breaking the cycle. About setting fire to the lies that told you to be small, to be quiet, to be grateful for crumbs. This is a story of the return. My return." Silence followed. Then a slow rise of applause. Not polite, but resonant. Like every clap said, "We see you. We feel you. We've been you." After the event, a young woman approached her with trembling hands. "I've been in something I didn't have words for," she said. "But hearing you, I think I can leave now." Jasmine didn't offer advice. She didn't promise it would be easy. She simply said, "Your peace is not up for negotiation. You don't have to stay where you're only partially loved." They hugged. And in that moment, Jasmine understood the full power of reclaiming her story. It wasn't just healing. It was liberation. That evening, she stood on her balcony as the sky turned gold. No phone in hand. No anxiety in her chest. Just the breeze, the city, and the steady beat of her own calm heart. She had moved through grief, through rage, through forgiveness. She had loved again. Not just romantically, but in friendship, in purpose, in self. She had built boundaries that weren't walls, but welcoming gates, open only to those who brought peace, not confusion. And she had learned the most important truth of all. Healing doesn't mean going back to who you were. It means becoming someone you've never had the chance to be. Inside, she framed a simple quote above her writing desk. It read, "You are not too much. You were just too much for the wrong person." She no longer needed to shrink, or explain, or chase. She was not a survivor of heartbreak. She was a witness to her own rebirth. And this time, she was the author.